This is the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast.
And we're back on the Catholic Movie Guy Podcast, the first edition of 2017. I thought, you know, it's 2017, it's a new year. What better way to start the new year by reviewing the previous year? Where did we go wrong? Where did we go right? Where did we go very, very right? And I thought, I'm going to do my best of 2016 list. Then I thought, Steve, because I call myself Steve because that's who I am. I said, Steve, that's kind of not a good idea. There's a few reasons why. One, to do that, to do like a rundown of your best of, you'd have to not include the Tin Man. And the Tin Man, or someone, is a vital component of this podcast. And he doesn't see new movies. It's very rare. You have to kind of force it down his throat. Also, he has a bit of a problem getting out of the house, if you know what I mean. So then I says, instead of just like running down all the best movies with the Tin Man, why don't we spread this bad boy out? I haven't seen every movie of 2016, obviously. There are many movies that interest me more, which interest me less. So what I'm going to do is, throughout the year of 2017, I'm going to highlight a particular movie that I liked from 2016 and discuss it at length. As of right now, just for the curious amongst you, I have not seen Silence yet because in my podunk town it has not come out. I assume that I will see it and that I will devote an entire podcast to that because there's a lot of interest out there in the trad Catholic circles about that movie. My second favorite movie of the year is Hacksaw Ridge of the movies I've seen. I did an extensive podcast about that. Please check that out if you're interested. My fourth favorite movie was Arrival, which I also podcasted about back in the day. My third favorite movie thus far this year is Hell or High Water, which is really fantastic. There's some content issues, please be advised. Nevertheless, I will do an extended podcast on that at some point in this year. As of right now, though, I'm going to talk a little bit about my favorite movie so far for 2016 and then focus in depth with the Tin Man on my number five movie for 2016. I say this with a bit of hesitance because I am, after all, the Catholic movie guy. That implies a bit of a masculine perspective. However, I'm a real man. I don't need to prove how much of a man I am. I can cry, I can laugh, I can love, I can fight, and I can enjoy what you may call the rom-com or the chick flick, or even, dare I say, the musical, because I'm a real man. And that's why, with great hesitance, I say that so far this year, my favorite movie is La La Land, the musical starring the great Ryan Gosling and Emma Watson, which I was basically forced to go see. I knew I had to see it because it's been so critically acclaimed, but I went with the Catholic Movie Gal, and I was blown away. I hate musicals. Hate them. Loathe them. I hate musicals, and I was blown away by this movie. It was great. As I say that, the Tin Man is making fun of me, despite the fact that he is what I would call a rom-com expert. And the number five movie on my list, which we will focus on today, could in some sense qualify as a rom-com, although with a decidedly intellectual bent. The movie, number five on my list for 2016, and what we focus on today, is Love and Friendship. Love and Friendship combines two of my loves and two of the Tin Man's passions: Whit Stillman movies, and Jane Austen writing. Is that a fair statement? The Tin Man.
Yes.
Brilliant, isn't he, folks?
It's a fantastic movie.
I was gonna start talking about the movie because I'm afraid we'll run long, as I am wont to do. But even
WTD.
Sometimes when I'm doing the podcast, I'm a little starstruck, and I'm a little jealous of the Tin Man's performance. When you can drop one word like that, one phrase, and
yes,
rewrite podcast history.
Yeah, I'm thinking,
I am in awe.
There was so much contained in that one syllable.
Yes.
I mean, you understand everything.
Or as
everything.
The French say, syllab.
True, true. This movie is terrific.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Yes, and for those who don't know, Whit Stillman is known for many films, but none more than a movie that Tin Man may have mentioned on the podcast. What's that movie called?
I believe it's called Metropolitan.
And this movie is not as good as that movie, but...
Are you serious?
You think this is better than Metropolitan?
No, Metropolitan's okay. Awesome.
I was going to say, But
let's not kid ourselves.
This movie combines two of... I love Jane Austen, and I think that that already calls my masculinity into question, but not like the Tin Man. I have not read every work of hers. I've not reread every work of hers like the Tin Man. I defer to him. I do regard Pride and Prejudice as one of my favorite books. The BBC Pride and Prejudice miniseries is one of my favorite movies, if it counts as a movie.
Yeah, it does. I mean, it's great. The thing about Austen is the modern adaptations of her novels tend to emphasize romance over the intellect, and she was an incredibly witty writer. This movie, Love and Friendship, is the Emma of our century. It Stillman does a fantastic job of making an intelligent and biting comedy with this movie.
And I do like Jane Austen. I just want to caution anyone out there, all the Catholic movie guys who are listening to this podcast, please don't turn off. This movie, for what it is, it is one of those rare moments when you can watch it with your wife, and your wife might like it more than you, but you'll actually enjoy the experience. Please do not turn off the podcast. It is a worthy work of art, and it is not in the least, feminine exclusive.
It's intelligent. It's very intelligent. And Kate Beckinsale, in addition to being triple hot, or possibly quadruple hot, is very hot, and also gives a great performance. This really is a wonderfully intelligent and witty role.
Right, and as I've said before, I'm not allowed to comment on women's looks on the podcast. That gives me some flack from the Catholic Movie Gal, but I will just say that Kate Beckinsale in this movie, not altogether unpleasant.
She's hot.
I certainly never felt like I need to look away from the screen.
She's not as hot as my wife, but she's hot. H-O-T hot?
Pregnant silence.
He.
Before we get started, since this is a Jane Austen, it has its genesis in Jane Austen, I want to read a quote about her just to give the prosecution's case.
Yeah?
From one of my other favorite authors, Mark Twain.
Oh, no. This is regarding, stupid.
Okay, well, it's my podcast, okay. So you can just
I hate
simmer down. Yeah.
This quote is he's an ignorant.
Are you going to simmer down?
Yeah, go ahead.
She makes me detest all her people without reserve. Is that her intention? It is not believable. Then it is her purpose to make the reader detest her people up to the middle of the book, and then in the rest of the chapters, like them? That could be. That would be high art. It would be worthwhile, too. Someday, I will examine the other end of her books and see. And that quote is clever.
Perfect, because it shows you didn't read it. He is an idiot. Mark Twain is an idiot. Write it down.
God rest his soul?
Yeah.
Are you really putting down Mark Twain? You don't like Mark Twain?
The dude, he wrote one good book.
You think you're the number one dad? First of all, you like his Joan of Arc book.
That's the good book.
You don't like Huckleberry Finn?
Okay, it's great. But bottom line is, he did not understand Austen. And that the quote you usually get is he liked
it. Wait, no. I will read it.
Go ahead.
Post haste. Every time I read Pride and Prejudice, I want to dig her up and beat her over the skull with her own shin bone.
Yeah, no, that just shows you he's a complete moron.
Ladies and gentlemen, Tin Man has no filter. Please don't be dissuaded by the Tin Man from continuing to listen to this podcast. There are many worthwhile nuggets you will glean. All I'll say is, I see why people dislike Jane Austen.
# nugget glean.
Even though I myself love her. Her characters can grate. Her manner of telling a story can grate.
No.
You can surely see that.
No.
All right. Well, let's table the Jane Austen discussion.
For either of us to criticize Jane Austen is incredibly rich. That chick could write.
I didn't criticize her. Mark Twain did.
Well, right.
Samuel Clemens.
He was a frontier hillbilly. Of course he has an insight.
From our
state.
He is
a great writer.
From the same state you're from.
He couldn't hold Jane Austen's girdle.
You have got to be kidding me.
She trumps him. It's not
you
even
can,
close.
You can like her better, but to say she couldn't hold her girdle, I think that's a bit rich.
No.
He's written some of the greatest works of fiction in history.
None of his books are as good as the worst of Austen's books.
You don't think that Joan of Arc book or Huckleberry Finn is as good as Northanger Abbey?
I knew you'd say that. I want to apologize. Northanger Abbey is... From Mansfield Park up... He couldn't touch any of her books. Thank you.
I'll just go ahead and reserve my objection for the record, Your Honor, while transitioning because this is dangerously close to becoming the Catholic Book Guy podcast, and it's not. It's the Catholic Movie Guy podcast. Let's talk about this movie.
Anybody who talks about Jane Austen, he's not to be thought of. Don't make me bell you.
So we're going to talk about this movie. It came out in 2016. It qualifies for the list. It's in my top five for the year. It's a Whit Stillman film. He has a singular vision as a director, and he takes a Jane Austen short story, if you can call it that, or as you would call it, Anne.
I would call it an epistolary novel, or right. more of it's, a novella.
It's a germ of a full story.
Right. It was early in her writing career through a series of letters, epistolary. Steve hates this word, epistolary. Look it up!
And anyway, it gives a wonderful opportunity, because Whit Stillman, with his florid prose, love... Are you ready? I'm continuing to go. With his love of examining and critiquing from a place of love, social convention, tradition, etc., is a perfect mesh for Jane Austen. A lot of people call him like a modern Jane Austen in his movies.
Yeah.
And he gets to take actual Jane Austen and add actual Whit Stillman yep. in a period piece. It works perfectly.
It's great.
It meshes perfectly to the point where you can't really tell where Austen ends and he begins.
Correct.
It's a marriage made in heaven, and it makes for a wonderful film.
And when I said it was the Emma of the 21st century, what I meant was Emma is the novel of Jane Austen that even modern adapters have to emphasize the intelligence of the heroine. And so he does that, and it has a bit of a modern take on it, and you can tell where he's got to have added into it. But you're right, you can't tell. It's seamless. It is a really great movie. It's funny and intelligent and visually very pleasing.
Okay, so what I want to do is, most of the podcast will be spoiler-free. At the very end, maybe the last 5 minutes, we'll have a little spoiler section. So if you haven't seen it, it is on Amazon Prime right now. I encourage everyone to download it. Guys, if you're looking for a date movie night at home, you want something that will look like you're scoring major wife points or girlfriend points, you pick this movie because you'll laugh, you'll enjoy it, you won't be bored. It's a surefire winner for all.
Wife points.
Tim, brief yes. plot summary, spoiler free.
Okay, brief plot summary.
Brief, not getting to the intricacies.
Lady Susan Vernon, played by Kate Beckinsale, she's not merely hot, but she's a really great actress. This is her best role ever, and if you've seen her in anything, that's saying something. So she plays this woman. She's a widow, but she's kind of a pariah. She's seeing one rich dude. She wants to marry another rich dude, but she wants to keep them all on a string. So she's kind of constrained.
She's a pariah. Why?
Because she's...
Because she's a bit...
She's a bit...
loose in her morals?
For the time period,
flirtatious,
yes.
incredibly.
At least flirtatious and suspect. She has a grown daughter who's young enough to be studying stuff, but old enough to get married. Frederica. And the thing is, this woman keeps a lot of guys on a string, wants to settle scores, and in the end gets, as they say, hoist on her own petard.
Spoiler alert.
No, that didn't say anything. We won't say how.
But let's focus on, first of all, you know, without spoiling the movie, the plot is really a device to just illustrate, it's a character study of each of these characters.
It is, and that is why Austen is great.
Yes.
She is...
And it's also an examination of the culture that they are in.
Right. The thing about Austen, I'm going to quote Anna Quinlan, that horrible woman. She's a miniaturist. She is a master of the human condition and characters. And whatever the plot that they're in, it's really a study of human nature. Every Austen novel, and this movie as an extension, and Whit Stillman does a great job, it's a wonderful study of human nature and particular characters within it. You will recognize friends and enemies throughout this movie.
And I just want to make a broad point to start off here. This is kind of going far afield. As Catholics, this illustrates something that we believe and something that is an integral part of our lived faith, which is that human behavior... People try to say, like, why do these people do that? Why do they have to introduce themselves this way? Why do they have to behave this way? Your formation as a human is inseparable from the cultural customs that you are brought up in. And they are not superfluous or whatever. They are not just relative. They are part of what makes you into the person God wants you to be. And this movie illustrates that all of her works do.
And gestures, manners, and ways of doing things being important. Think of the liturgy. If you think Jane Austen tends to be a little silly, or that Georgian manner being a little silly, just Picture in your mind the Ferguson riots and decide which one you'd rather have.
As is fairly typical, I would say you've gone straight into hyperbole.
No, I've gone straight to the point because I'm the Tin Man.
The point being that, yes, some of these customs can be modified and gradually, organically changed, but the germ of them comes from something that's essential to the human person and cannot be discarded without serious consequence. We see that today. You know, it's not about like what type of dress, you know, this specific type of bonnet you wear or whatever, but the complete revolution that we've had in discarding the ways of the past have led to a fundamental disintegration of the human person.
Yes, and if you want to talk about Whit Stillman, it's like the time when Nick says to Tom in Metropolitan about detachable collars. You're talking about more than detachable collars. Yeah, I am.
That was three bells. You could at least pause at the bell.
I know, but
The bell has no effect to you. The line is a dot to you. But you're right.
He dissed now the Reformation. That's pretty good.
Now that I've belled, I agree. It's very relevant. Please continue. It's exactly like the detachable collars. The detachable collar scene from Metropolitan, which, dear listener, you haven't seen Metropolitan? What's wrong with you?
Better bell yourself.
There's no self-bell.
Hashtag self-bell.
If you haven't seen Metropolitan, please do. Exactly. That is a Jane Austen book in one scene. That entire discussion. It's an examination of why a thing is and why it's important, despite its seeming ridiculousness or the minutia of it.
Heaven is hierarchical, and therefore the most perfect society on Earth, which can never be perfect, has to be hierarchical. And though we hate the hierarchy, there is a validity to it. Detachable collars, people, look into it.
So let's focus in on the movie now.
Yes.
We've gone very far afield.
I know. But this is philosophy, man.
The Kate Beckinsale character
is
someone who flaunts these societal norms. This flaunting is a source of humor in the movie. At first, it's a source of endearing her to you
as
the modern viewer. Because we are so far removed, we can't help but laugh at these people and the ridiculousness of their conventions.
Yes, it's wonderful.
But by the second part of the movie and the end of the movie, it not only leads to ruin for her and her family, in a certain sense, and shame to her daughter, it also leads to you, the viewer, becoming fed up with this woman.
Yes.
And you see, maybe there was a reason that she was ostracized by society.
I hate to do this, but I am going to agree with the Catholic movie guy 100%.
Yeah.
And I think that it is brilliant on Stillman's part because everybody hates this woman. They don't know how she gets away with what she does. They all are kind of looking for her to fall because she's defying these conventions. And she's just kind of selfish. I mean, really to the extreme, kind of. I mean, she's selfish. And in the end, you get tired of her. You experience what everybody around her experiences. Even though you are a modern person, you start to adapt to the mores of the time. It's really brilliantly done.
But let's talk about Beckinsale, because I'm not an expert on Beckinsale's performance. I'm not an expert on her filmography or anything, other than to say you don't want to look away from the screen when she's on. She's a compelling presence, for sure.
H.O.T.
I mean, I haven't seen all the Underworlds, for instance. I've seen Serendipity, which she was great in.
Much Ado About Nothing is the best film she's been in,
but she was a bit. Okay. But, and I don't know what the Oscar buzz is on her for actress, but I think that I couldn't imagine someone else doing this role, having seen it, and doing it as well as she did, because she draws you in, first of all, just by her mere presence. And then, you know, like she really does endear you to the character. And almost as soon as you fall in love with the character, you switch. And you're like, this is an odious person.
Yes.
And for her to do that with such aplomb, it was a great performance. I think she should get a Best Actress nod.
Now, ironically, she was in an Austin movie. Remember how I told you, well, I said before that this is the Emma of the 21st century. She was in a BBC production of Emma that ironically came out the same year as the great Gwyneth Paltrow's theatrical release. Gave it a different take, but she's used to the Austin milieu, and I think it's interesting that she's Emma and she's this woman, because this is Emma without a moral center, if you get my drift.
Or at least much of a moral center.
Right, not as much of a moral center, to be sure.
And if I haven't lost you male listeners yet. It's a funny movie.
It is.
There's a character in there, Sir James. Oh man, the dude is funny.
He is funny to the point of
almost ridiculousness.
But still just, does a great job of reining him in just short of I can't buy into this guy.
Just across the line. Yeah, and he reminds me a lot in a different way of Mr. Collins from Pride and Prejudice.
Right.
Except stupider. But much stupider. Right. But that same kind of role.
There is something I want to discuss about sort of a Catholic moment in this movie. It's your podcast, but I'd like to mention it before you end it.
Oh, Tim, this is a complete surprise. Please, go on.
It actually is a surprise. I haven't mentioned this to you at all.
Tim, I said it was a surprise. You don't have to belabor it.
It sounded ironic to me.
Tim. How could that be ironic? Could you please go?
Okay. There is a discussion of the Ten Commandments at several levels of this movie. And the very first such discussion occurs where Kate Beckinsale, who's manipulating her daughter, Frederica, Lady Susan's manipulating Frederica, talks about the Fourth Commandment, so-called. Fourth Commandment, which we all know as Catholics is
honor thy mother and father.
Right. So, father and mother, don't be a modernist.
I don't think that's essential, but yes, you're right. Okay. Go ahead.
So, and the funny thing is we all know that the Protestants call that commandment the fifth commandment. They divvy up, you know, like the Psalms, there's a different numbering. So that's their fifth commandment. But she specifically refers to it as a fourth commandment to her daughter. And as it comes out, the daughter doesn't understand the numbering. But eventually there's a Protestant minister that talks to her about it later, that it's actually that the Roman Church calls it the fourth commandment. And in the sense of the plot, it doesn't really matter. And we don't really get a sense that Lady Susan is Catholic. But it's interesting to me that Stillman, a WASP, if there ever was one, starts this with the Roman numbering of the Ten Commandments and lists honor thy father and thy mother. Lady Susan perverts it to do whatever I say, regardless of how evil. But in the end, there are many characters who comment on this specific commandment and what it means to really fulfill it. And it's really quite beautiful.
Okay, well, can I take the contraposition?
Yeah.
I do agree that it's a Curio, right?
Nice.
That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, that's a 50 center. It's like epistolary.
But given that it's uttered by that numbering is used by the ostensible villain, it could be easily interpreted that Stillman as a WASP is throwing some shade on the Catholics.
Correct, but in the end, it's the most important thing in the movie. Because in the end, obeying the mother ends happily. And obeying somebody that has authority with whom you don't agree or who is unjust ends up inuring to your benefit, i.e.
Tim,
look at the current situation in the
church. I hear you barking, doggy.
Yeah.
And I love where you're going with it. We're not even focusing on the plot anymore. Let's go far afield and discuss the ramifications of this notion, which is obedience.
I just thought it was neat.
Yes. I think it's one of the things that modern man has the most difficulty with in our religion is being obedient to those in authority over you, because you see this all the time. Women are left to be, you know, what do you call them, spinsters, because their father, they can't get married off and they have no authority and all that. It's interesting that Austin, who's kind of a proto-feminist to feminists in a sense, because she's criticizing this order, is actually in this sense, and it could be Stillman, because again, we're not entirely sure where she ends and he begins, is actually saying in this movie, nope, that order actually has value and it works out for the majority of the people.
I'm glad you mentioned it, because my take, and I think your take, is different than that of the New Yorker, which is, it's the same with Austin, it's the same with this movie, it's the same with Stillman. They are fundamentally conservative in the best sense of the term. Stillman is a conservative filmmaker. Metropolitan about these, you know, what you would assume would be effete liberal debutantes, socialites, it turns out to be conservative. It's about morality. Barcelona, which you would think is about modern sexuality, is really about anti-Americanism and what the social order is all about. Stillman upholds the traditional order in every one of his movies. He is a fantastic filmmaker.
And I think this is a great illustration of a broader point, which is whenever you watch any piece of art, you're looking for goodness, beauty, truth. The more or less it has of that, the better. But part of your duty as a viewer is that no piece of art is going to give you the answer key 100%. You have to bring a sensibility that can interpret it in that way.
A what kind of sensibility?
A Catholic sensibility. Bingo. What you're saying with conservatism, which is a fine term and a good one most of the time, I would actually just replace with traditionalism. In the sense, not in a strident theological position, but in the sense of we need to examine everything we do from that perspective and learn from it first. And only when you learn from it can you say, here's where we can color the outlines a bit. And I think that's what Austin is saying, and that's what Whit Stillman does. He's saying, not that we have to continue to wear detachable collars, but please let us learn from why they exist and let us conserve why they, the reason for them in what we do going forward.
Okay, as an aside, we should still wear detachable collars just for their own sake. But I agree with your use of the term traditionalism because we understand it in a Catholic sense. Conservatism, properly identified, is the conserving of something good.
The and handing down good, of it's tradition. Catholic. The right. handing down of tradition, which right. is the same thing. Right. But that's what I'm saying is like, indeed. People accuse us of being ossified and never wanting to change, and that is not what traditionalism or conservatism, a true conservative, is. It's our ancestors knew something. They are telling us something. What are they telling us?
And more than that, the church is the fundamental source of culture. God created us a certain way. To conserve those good things is not to be ossified, but to put the proper fuel in your car to make it run. You put sugar water in your car, it's not going to run. Modernism is sugar water in your car. You use the term truth, beauty, goodness. That was actually a very big theme in the movie. There was a whole dialogue on that. Do you remember that?
Vaguely.
The minister's talking to Frederica.
Yes, okay. Yeah.
Truth is what we perceive with the intellect. Goodness is what we perceive.
The most Catholic Protestant minister in history.
Yes, it was entirely Catholic. Truth, goodness, and beauty. There's a wonderful scene in that movie about truth, goodness, and beauty. Very didactic. Yeah. It's worth watching just for that.
Yeah, it's can't recommend the movie enough. Again, to all those who are skeptical, all of you people who'd rather watch Die Hard, I get it. I totally get it. You need to watch this movie. It's good for you. It is, you know, a true, well-rounded man will like this movie. That's just my opinion.
If you're afraid to watch this movie, I've got no time for you. Get out.
Okay, I do have time for you.
Me not.
In fact, go ahead and call me, comment. Rate me 5 stars on iTunes.
I'd give it 3 thumbs up.
Follow my Twitter or my Facebook page.
If I had 3 thumbs.
And you do. Remember that thumb they grafted under your left foot?
Hashtag thumb graft.
When you lost the big toe in the boating accident?
I suppose. Who was the actress that had a thumb grafted on, or a toe grafted on her thumb?
I think you're making this up.
Fox? What's her name?
I don't know what you're talking about. No idea.
Megan Fox. Look it up.
You're kidding.
I don't know that she had a graft on, but she has a thumb. She has a toe thumb. There's no.
I was going for the Seinfeld reference. How's her grip? A little firm? A little sweaty?
She's got man hands.
That's a different episode.
I just wanted to say man hands.
All right. So, yeah, it's a movie that you can enjoy with your significant other. It's intelligent. It's funny. It won't schmaltz you to death, and it really does bring out beauty, truth, and goodness in a way that's enjoyable and entertaining.
Bingo.
I give it a solid 9 out of 10, and that's on one viewing. It could go up. It's that good.
Same here. 9 out of 10 on one viewing.
All right. So that's that for the non-spoiler section. I want to, if I could, just briefly discuss spoilers. And I'm going to do that in...
Can you say spurlers?
3, 2, 1. That Spurlers joke.
I just terrible. Love the Spurlers thing, man. Come on.
That's horrible.
It's terrific.
Why do I do this? So here we go. I want to just draw out the final point, which is that, as it turns out, all of her machinations don't work out the way that she intended, but they do work out for the good for all parties involved, in a sense. Especially for the people, they work out in proportion to the goodness of the characters themselves.
You just blew my mind, actually.
Really?
Yeah, because that's absolutely true.
I really blew your mind? That makes me happy. Thank
because
you.
There's one idiot who doesn't do very well at all.
Yeah, but he's an idiot.
But maybe he gets a...
I think he's morally flexible, too. Yeah. But he does, for his station, end up with Kate Beckinsale.
Yeah, who is, by the way, quite fetching.
Have you mentioned that?
Yes, she's
hot. And like I said, you know, whatever. I don't
who cares?
I don't pay attention
who cares if she's incredibly attractive?
the Frederica, who has suffered from her mother's decisions, in the end, is a good daughter, benefits from it, and ends up with the catch of the day and a happy, truly loving marriage.
Bing.
I mean, and that's heartwarming because it works out for her, and that's the one you really care about, not Kate Beckinsale.
In the end, you do.
Yeah.
In the beginning of the movie, you think she's actually quite nefarious. You're suspicious of her, and she ends up being the starlet.
And also, one of our favorite words, cuckold. Great cuckolding in this movie. I mean, incredible.
Mitt Romney style
elite,
cuckolding.
I don't even know what that means. Elite level of cuckolding by Kate Beckinsale.
You do know what I mean.
You feel sorry for the guy, but, well, you know, he's a complete fool.
I mean, estadounidense.
And it's pretty funny. So there you go. Great movie. Please watch it. And when you're done watching that, go ahead and check out the BBC miniseries of Pride and Prejudice, which is, you know,
the great Jennifer Ely and Colin Firth. It is the greatest Austen adaptation of all time.
I have to agree with that, and I've seen most of them. Great.
Yeah, it's terrific.
Sense and Sensibility was great. I know it was a trifle compared, but still, it was great.
It was great.
It was great.
Alan Rickman's a great actor.
Great.
Emma Thompson is supposed to be playing a 19-year-old girl.
Yes, that's ridiculous.
That was ludicrous.
Okay, but if you can just, you know, we have CGI now. If you can just push past that, she's great.
Yes, but that is one, I'm glad you mentioned it, because that particular movie embodies, though it is high quality, the tendency of the modern filmmaker to emphasize the romance element of Austen versus the wit, intelligence, and character study.
And to be fair, in a 2-hour movie, it's hard not to emphasize that.
No, of course.
But that's why the Pride and Prejudice BBC miniseries is so great, because it gives the space for her to breathe and talk to you about these
things. Yes, indeedy, Mohidi.
So that's it for this week. I will say that I'll apologize to all my male friends out there who didn't know that I was doing this. I would just encourage you to use one of those like Men in Black devices and just forget this podcast ever happened. And we'll come back next week and talk about some guts and some glory.
I'm a man enough to not care what you think of this.
Objection.
Well, certainly, yeah.
Objection.
I mean,
and that's it for the Catholic Movie Guy podcast. What will we do next week, Tim? Do we know? No, we don't, because what we do depends largely upon whatever Tim has happened to see.
If I can give you a peek behind the curtain of Oz, Steve will browbeat me into doing something I don't want to do, and then I'll talk about it.
And it doesn't just apply to this podcast, but to our social gatherings, work, nearly anything in our life.
That's right, Wayne.
So until next week, wishing you a happy new year and still a Merry Christmas. It was 12th night. Please enjoy it. Celebrate.
Yes. 12th night is great.
And a blessed Epiphany, which to the ancients and to most of the world is just, you know, is the bookend and equal to Christmas. Celebrate that and go to Mass if you can. Celebrate it, pray, and enjoy your week.
#3King. Party on, Wayne.
We're out.